3 weeks from now, we'll have a better sense of what is happening with health care reform and oral health, in the sense of if there are major changes in the Senate, that tells us one thing. Is there a major change in the presidency? That tells us something else. If things stay the way they are, that tells us something else. So what we're going to get today is a snapshot of where we are today, with the understanding it could change dramatically after 3 weeks. Of course, it will take time for it to change, depending on what the changes are. It sort of reminds me many, many years ago what Adam said to Eve. Adam said to Eve, "We live in times of change," and we still do. So let's move ahead with our first speaker. And what was originally planned, we had a lot of last-minute cancellations for a variety of reasons, and I really want to thank the panel. This is a very different panel than what we started out with, and I want to thank them all for joining us with relatively recent notification. Our first speaker is Mr. Herb Schultz. He's the regional director for the San Francisco region of the United States, Region 9. He was appointed by President Obama to be the regional director for Health and Human Services. He serves as the secretary's key representative for Arizona, California, Nevada, Hawaii, and the Pacific Territories. He coordinates the HHH activities and initiatives on the federal, state, local, tribal, and territorial level on a full range of health and social services. He also works with external non-government organizations. So let's go ahead and give a big round of a hand for Mr. Herb Schultz, who will be talking about health care reform and you.
Good afternoon. Did something just turn on? Okay. I don't know. Let me ask you a quick question before we start. How many of you are dental professionals? Okay. And how many of you are academics? How many of you are consumers? How many of you are employers? How many of you do some philanthropic work? Community-based organizations? Okay. Small business? Large business? Moderate business? I already asked if your employer is your business, but that's okay. We'll do that. Oh, Myron says monkey business? We're going to be Laurel and Hardy up here. I can feel it. I'll ask only one other question. How many of you feel like you really know what's in the Affordable Care Act? Okay. It's okay. There's a lot in there, but there's some really wonderful things for dental professionals, for small businesses, for academics, for consumers, for the whole range of providers that we're going to talk about. And I have what I sometimes think is the unenviable position, but I think it's actually enviable, to do the Affordable Care Act in 20 minutes. So let me tell you a couple different things. One is that you can have this PowerPoint, hand me your card, or you'll have at the end of this my cell phone, my email. You can text me, you can email me, and you can say, give me your presentation. For those of you that do not live in Region 9, California, Arizona, Nevada, Hawaii, the three territories, and actually Micronesia, Palau, or the Marshall Islands, where we have public health relationships with, I can also link you with your regional director. There's 10 of us throughout the country that serve the President and Secretary Kathleen Sebelius. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to move around a little bit on this, but what I want to sort of start with, because I think it's the most important piece, is I'm going to go with health care reform, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, has three stools, if you will. And again, you'll have all of this so you can, you know, write this or I can give you copies of it. But I think it's important to talk about it in three broad strokes, and there'll be slides sort of associated with all of them, but bear with me because they're not in the order that I like to do them, even though this is one of our presentations. But what I want to talk about is increasing access to coverage and coverage for up to 30 million Americans. So it's coverage that we're going to talk about first. Then we're actually going to talk about consumer protections. And when I talk about consumer protections, there's actually a lot about public health and prevention that's in there, as well as workforce and infrastructure and things that are very important to providers overall, to dental providers and professionals across the line, and then in your roles as families, consumers, businesses, and that. And then the third is I'm going to mention some things that go into the increasing quality and containing cost bucket. And containing cost does not mean harming consumers. It means trying to make sure that the benefits are provided in a high quality manner so that providers can be better compensated for higher quality care, as well as contain the costs. So coverage number one, consumer protection / public health number two, and then three, increasing quality and containing costs. Just a nice picture I like to show that's there. But let me go back here to the first one, and let's talk about the coverage issue a little bit. I said up to 30 million people who will get coverage under the Affordable Care Act, most U.S. citizens and documented individuals. Now, the important thing with this is that there's two basic ways to do this, and both of them will affect oral health and dentistry and dental professionals in a number of different ways. But let me take it this way for you. Number one is Medicaid, because I think it's important to talk about the expansion of Medicaid. And the expansion of Medicaid, per the Supreme Court, is voluntary for a state to do. If a state decides to expand Medicaid, it means that our Medicaid population, individuals under $15,000 a year, families of four under $30,000, will now gain access to Medicaid regardless of their disability. And the reason that I mention it is this thing called essential health benefits, which I'll talk about in a minute. But whether somebody gets their coverage through Medicaid or the private expansion, and we can talk about that, there are 10 essential benefits in healthcare reform, and one of those includes pediatric dental, pediatric oral and vision care, and we can talk about what that means. So you have to think about Medicaid, and that is largely an expansion to childless adults. Now, let me flip for a second and talk with you about anybody in your states or wherever you're from, because I've seen a number of folks who are also from areas other than the United States. But for those of you from the U.S., how many of you have heard of these new things called exchanges? Anyone hear about exchanges? Okay. Think about them as marketplaces. Who hasn't heard about these things called exchanges? Okay. So can we do, let's just say, how many of you go on Orbitz.com, Travelocity.com, Dentistry.com, FindADentist.com? Okay. This is a new marketplace, and what it basically is that, as you know, that starting January 1st, 2014, it is an individual requirement for health insurance for most U.S. citizens and documented individuals. On the flip side of that, nobody can be denied because of any type of pre-existing condition, nor can they actually be charged anything greater because of a pre-existing condition, other than their age, their family size, their geography. Unless they're a smoker, they can be charged a little more. So we talked about Medicaid and those up to 15 million that will be in Medicaid. But these exchanges, and there will be state exchanges, state-based exchanges, whether they're federally facilitated or a state decides to do them. How many of you are in states that know the exchanges that are working on getting exchanges that are up and operating? Okay. The reason that I mention these exchanges is twofold. One is it's for individuals, and it's for small businesses under 50. And I could talk with all of you that are dental health professionals, and how many of you have your own practices? Okay, so you're more in academics, public health. You know, some do both. But we can talk about what that means in terms of practices and all of that. But the important thing there is I mentioned the essential health benefits. This is the key to talking with you about coverage, because regardless of whether someone gets their coverage through a healthcare exchange or in the private sector, private market, or from Medicaid, there are 10 guaranteed benefits. And one of those benefits, as I said, pediatric oral, but there's also prevention, wellness, and chronic disease management, and a number of other things that could affect the dental profession, dental and public health, and all of those sorts of things that we can talk about. So a lot of folks have asked me, and somebody asked me this morning, so I'll go ahead and say that before we get to some of these consumer protections is, well, why did Congress just do pediatric dental? I can't answer that. I wasn't in Congress at the time, and actually I wasn't in my job at that time. But what I can tell you is that when we have issued guidance, we, the Department of Health and Human Services, guidance to the states to talk about these new marketplaces, again, for individuals, individuals and their families, what we have said is that you want to model your benefits for those that get their coverage through these healthcare exchanges. We actually think 3 million children will get their coverage through an exchange and therefore get pediatric dental coverage, 3 million by 2018. The reason that we mention that and mention all of this is because you've got the notion of we told people, we told states, we told stakeholders that the best way to move forward with what's the essential health benefits, why does it matter, is to model it after what your state is doing. And you can model it after what your federal government employee plans look like, what your small employer plans look like. Well, what does all of that mean? What all of that means is that many of those model plans have adult dental. So it is a conversation that we should have around that. Just because the required benefits are pediatric does not mean that it's not going to be that. So we've got coverage up to 30 million people, half of them in Medicaid, the other half in private coverage. All pediatric dental covered, and we can talk about a number of things that loaned with that. So if we go to the second one, as my iPad works, okay, there are a lot of different things to talk about in terms of public health. And I'm going to put up this one because I think it will sing to you. But there's a number of things in public health that are very important and that are very oral health focused. There is a national prevention strategy that we have in this country. And all throughout the country, we are working to ensure, and whether it's public health and workforce, whether it's public health and infrastructure, or whether it just happens to be where do people practice, through the National Health Service Corps, in federally qualified health centers, there are huge, significant benefits that are coming in, whether you're an individual, whether somebody is in a community and the notion of community transformation grants or work site wellness. But in this area of prevention and public health, community prevention, clinical prevention, public health infrastructure, research, and tracking, there are some very specific provisions that go right into the heart of the oral health infrastructure and ensuring that through surveillance activities and a lot of other things that are happening, it's not just about medical care. A lot of folks say, well, it's not as prominent. Some of the words may not be there, but a lot of the words are to make sure that we're focusing on that. So if you look at this chart, obviously it says doctors and nurses, but it really is doctors, nurses, dentists, dental health professionals, because there is an oral health care prevention education campaign. There is a number of programs, training in general pediatric and public health dentistry, an alternative dental health provider demonstration, health and nutrition examination surveys, medical expenditures. All of those have to begin to incorporate oral health into those pieces. And so whether it's the infrastructure and surveillance, whether it's in workforce and the training of dental health professionals overall, alternative dental professionals, academic institutions receiving dollars for rural dentistry, for public health dentistry, for disadvantaged populations, there is just a lot of stuff that's in there. So you've got a $10 billion public health and public health and prevention fund, one, as I said. Two, it has very significant provisions both in the clinical realm, but also at the community realm, the infrastructure realm, research, tracking, epidemiology, and on the workforce level, to where there are programs that are greatly expanded that will provide new opportunities for those. We have an $11 billion expansion in the federally qualified health center system, and most of the FQHCs are providing significant dental resources. There is a huge school-based health clinic expansion, and many of those clinics, far more than people realize, are actually out there in the schools, but also are providing dental benefits. And then we also have the National Health Service Corps that has dental health professionals, and we have tripled it since 2008 because there's a $5 billion investment in the National Health Service Corps, and much of that money, some of that money has been directed towards dental professionals and things of that nature. So when you look at the first two, because it's a little sort of the way that this works is not the way I like to do it, as you can see. Let me mention one other thing on the preventive services side. How many of you have heard about the free preventive health services under reform? Okay. Most people have heard about cancer screenings, diabetes screening, HIV, AIDS, cancer, heart disease, all of these screening examinations that come along with that. There actually are, preventive health services on the dental front, and the biggest are risk assessments for young children and fluoride chemo prevention for children in areas where fluoride is not in the water. So there actually are some of these preventive health services that folks here never can be charged a copayment, deductible, out of your pocket. This is actually in the exchange. This is in the private market. And states can do this in the Medicaid market. It's a little bit of a different thing, and we can sort of talk about that. So one, you have an expansion of health care and oral health care, 30 million people. Two, half of that is in Medicaid, largely childless adults under $15,000 a year. And the other flip side of that is in these new marketplaces called exchanges. The important thing is that no matter where you get, if you're an individual or your family or you're a small business owner, pediatric dental is covered. And the direction that we've provided to those states that are developing their exchanges is to model it after plans, about 10 different health plans, and many of those health plans throughout the country provide dental as well. Two, again, consumer protections. You're probably hearing much about 19 to 25 young adults, 3.1 million in the country going on their parents' plan. No pre-existing conditions for children under 19. They can't be denied health insurance. But I focused again on, if you look at public health and prevention, a national prevention strategy, and a council, individual preventive health services, no copays and deductibles, and that hits to oral health. You look at community-based, so I don't know how many of you are aware of these things called community transformation grants, but healthcare reform is not about just health or not just about human services. It's about the social determinants of health. If you don't have a roof over your head, you're not thinking about oral health. You're not thinking about medical health. If you don't have transportation to and from a provider, dental provider, or others, and this is the sort of thing that community-based organizations, cities, counties, and states who have been awarded community transformation grants, there are many dental health professionals that are a part of that. So again, whether we're looking at clinical, whether we're looking at infrastructure, research, tracking, epidemiology, whether we're looking at community-based, there is oral health that is infused throughout the Affordable Care Act. Then the third is increasing quality and containing costs. I know that's a huge bucket, and we could talk about many, many different pieces of it. But I think the biggest piece, and one for those of you on the public health side, the important thing is that we're trying to use the Medicare and Medicaid systems to drive changes in our private market around how healthcare is delivered, and that includes oral health. And there is a $10 billion appropriated, funded innovation fund that's in Medicare and that's in Medicaid. And it's based on two things that does affect, from a public health perspective, what happens around oral health. And that is trying to demonstrate through pilots and demonstrations changes or different ways of delivering service or different models of reimbursement. And how many of you have heard of these things called accountable care organizations, ACOs? Okay. It's sort of, if you will, trying to demonstrate to the rest of the country outside of California and Minnesota and a few other places that really do very significant managed care, closed panel managed care, it's not a managed care plan, but it's hospitals and other providers, physicians and others. And we haven't seen yet, from what I understand, a lot of the oral health or dental health components coming in, except when folks are talking with the sort of Medicare beneficiaries. That's where it started, and some Medicare Advantage plans are providing oral health care services. But what I want to say about that is that there is a pediatric ACO demonstration program that's in there. There are a lot of different ways that I hope that I can help you and others sort of navigate the system to see whether or not there may be increasing opportunities for oral health. So I've got 5 minutes left because I've done that, and we're going to do, we've all promised just to do 20 so we can do a very active sort of Q&A discussion. But I think the important thing in knowing this is that there are many different parts of this act. You hear more probably about the health and healthcare pieces as opposed to the oral healthcare pieces, but when you break it down and you look at things like Medicaid expansion, or you look at things like these new marketplaces in coverage, you start talking about the focus is you've got prevention and public health and chronic disease management as a benefit set by the state-based exchange. What does that mean? You've got pediatric dental, but then you have all of these other places, other things, as I said, that could result in adults getting coverage for dental as well, far more so than today. Certainly on the kids' side, we know that to be true because of that benefit. And so if you just look under the surface of coverage, I can help you navigate through any of that and what does it really mean. On the second one that we talked about on consumer protections, we can talk about on infrastructure, on workforce, all of the different programs. Many of them are in academic institutions. Some of you may be there. There's actually the expansion of primary care residency programs, including dental programs. And so there are significant workforce programs that are funded under the Act. There are some that are authorized but not funded. But that is what I think we all need to talk about. And then on increasing quality and containing costs, there's a lot of different ways and some things that I can sort of get into how, you know, some of that works if you're interested as we sort of go up and back in our dialogue. But I think it's fair to say that there are a significant number of resources that are looking at sort of the public health consequences of all of these different ways in which to expand coverage to folks. So I'm really interested in hearing from you about what are sort of, when you dig down between coverage, consumer protection, increasing quality, containing costs, what are those critical issues that we need to be thinking about as we sort of move the system? It's not all about coverage, and I understand that, and I talk about that a lot with various people. Just because you have coverage, it's up to states whether they want to have standalone dental plans or have just full-service plans that provide dental, where they can do both. Those are issues and implications for health. But there are significant dollars that are CDC-based dollars that are going in this to enhance surveillance, research, tracking. And some folks have said to me, the words are not there. And sometimes the words are not there, but from a programmatic implementation standpoint, those programs actually are there. And it's just a matter of somebody reading all of the different pages and saying, well, where does this happen? But there are various programs being run from CDC, from HRSA, and other places in the department that very specifically resources that are being used to, if you will, strengthen the public health infrastructure around oral health in all of those ways, in coverage and in 2 minutes, and in coverage and in consumer protections and in that increase in quality and containing costs. So I'm going to end early, okay? Hey, so I know that's a lot. You can get a copy of this. Let's drill down in the Q&A. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I guess I will use my last 60 seconds because I have to, because I promised you. Two things I want you to do. Three things, actually. I don't know. I don't have a job where somebody yells at me because I take out my BlackBerry too much or my iPhone. But take out your iPhone. Take out your BlackBerry. My cell phone, my email, and then I'm going to give you our website where a lot of the information around healthcare reform is, because a key part of what we try and do is navigate you and make sure that you can, one, be aware of what this law does, but two, figure out how it best impacts you and your communities. There are lots of funding opportunities. Some of them are in oral health. Some are authorized and not funded yet, like a public health education campaign around oral health, and we can talk about what that means. So 415-265-7049, 415-265-7049. You can hear I'm a transplanted East Coaster. I actually live in L.A. but work in San Francisco. Herb, H-E-R-B, anyone a Herbert? Thank God it took me 40 years to like Herb, and I just hit AARP age. Herb, H-E-R-B, dot S-C-H-U-L-T-Z, Schultz at HHS.gov. I do a weekly newsletter. It's one page. I'll never send you a 200-page, you know, CDC something and say, what do you think about that idea on surveillance? But in my role and those of the regional directors, we get to advise the secretary, the White House, and all of our divisions, whether it's HRSA, CMS, whatever it happens to be, on all of the policies that we're doing to implement health care reform. We can't be successful in the implementation if we're not working with you. So thank you.
That was excellent. Now I finally got a better understanding of the Affordable Care Act. I thought that was very well done and very clear. Thank you very much. We had a number of people from Washington coming, the chief dental officer for HRSA, the chief dental officer for Medicare, Medicaid, the dental folks, and they just couldn't get travel money, and they couldn't get allowed to come. The budget, as you know, came out very late. So we had a number of last-minute substitutions, and that was a great presentation on such short notice.